As mentioned, today we celebrate the ascension of Jesus into heaven, and it's one of the major events of Jesus's life. We don't think of it a lot of time, the ascension as being one of the major events that of Jesus's life. We think of the incarnation, Jesus's death, his resurrection. We have holidays even that are associated with those, the incarnation with Christmas, Good Friday, and Easter. If you go into Walgreens, if you were to go into the Walgreens on Ogden and Cass, depending on the season you'd go in, that you would go in, you'd have no problem finding a Christmas card. You'd have no problem finding an Easter card. But I guarantee you, if you walked into Walgreens today, you would not find an Ascension card. You'd find a whole bunch of Mother's Day cards, right, today, but probably not an Ascension card. But the church has always seen the Ascension as a pivotal event in Jesus's life. Two things this morning: holy discontent, and secondly, wanting to go up. So first, holy discontent. Someone called me on Thursday night, somebody from one of my previous assignments, previous parishes, and they said they were struggling. So I said, well, tell me about it. What's going on? And they said, I don't know, Father Mark, like everything seems to be good. Like the family's good. You know, my spouse and I are good. The kids are good. Work is good. I just feel like I'm in this funk. And I proceeded to ask him some questions like, hey, are you praying? Do you have any major unconfessed sins? And he, you know, talked about that, answered, you know, everything's, yeah, Father Mark, I'm praying. And so finally, I just said, man, I think your funk might just be that you're not home. Your funk might just be the fact that this isn't home. See, the ascension points to the fact that we are made for another world, that we're bound for heaven. C.S. Lewis, who I've quoted a number of times here before in his classic book, Mere Christianity, in one chapter, he gives an argument for Christianity from the basis of desire, the longing that everybody has in their hearts and experiences in our hearts. He starts off and he says, if you're young, you may not have experienced this, but when you do go out into the world, you're going to realize that the things that you thought were going to make you happy, they don't quite keep their promises. The marriage that you thought was going to make you happy, the job, the trips. And he stops and he says, I'm not talking about bad marriages. I'm not talking about unsuccessful marriages. I'm talking about the best possible marriages out there. I'm talking about the best jobs, the best trips, the ones where that put you up in the best hotels, the trips that you have the best scenery. He said, you're going to find out that nothing else satisfies. He says, once you notice the discontent in the soul that never quite get quenched or satisfied, he says, you have one of three options. The first is to say, I need to get a better wife. I need to get a better job. Because happiness, see, is somewhere to be found in the world. And so, he says that will make you driven, because you'll go from one thing to the next and you'll keep seeking it. You'll be a driven person, but he says you'll also end up being anxious. He says this is the worst of the bad options. He says secondly, the second stance you could take is to say, well, there is no happiness, there is no satisfaction to the point in which my heart longs for that can get. Like it won't. It's not there to that extent. It's not going to be satisfied. So what I need to do is I just need to harden myself, and I need to become cynical. I need to get cynical. And he says, ultimately, what that will do is that will dehumanize you. You'll become less than human, because what you'll end up doing is you'll kill the spots in your heart that longs for more, that longs for love, that longs for happiness, for satisfaction. He says the first way, that's the man who's a fool. The second way, he says, that's the disillusioned man. And he says, you don't have to go either way. There's a third way. There's a Christian way. There's the way in which the ascension points to. And I just quote him here. He says this: creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exists. A baby feels hunger. Well, there's such thing as food. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there's such thing as water. If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. Question for us this morning: do you ever feel discontent? Do you ever feel discontent? And are you able to see that what you want cannot be had ultimately in this world? See, that helps situate me. It helps orientate my life. It helps me navigate relationships and situate relationships in my life to have proper expectations even. Even good things, right? But this holy discontent is like, I want more. I desire and I long for more. And the ascension points to the fact that we're made for another world, that we're bound for heaven. Secondly, wanting to go up. I made that mention here at this Mass, but I'll be spending the day on the roof coming up next Tuesday. You know, joking around with the kids and said, I'm nervous, right? I'm scared. It's not because I'm scared of heights going up in the roof, but I just don't know what I'm going to find up there, right? How many balls I'm going to find. I don't know what I'm going to do all day. Am I going to pace back and forth on the roof? But there was a poster over the course of us raising raffle tickets. And, you know, if we get to $25,000, I'll go up on the roof. And there was at one point a poster, the promo that said, it was a picture of me up on the roof, and it said, help Father Mark get closer to God. But physically going up does not get us closer to God. There's the first person who ever entered space, who did space travel. He was a Soviet in 1961, and after he got back from space, he said this: I looked and looked and looked, but I did not see a heaven. I looked and looked and looked, but I did not find God. See, if Elon Musk made tomorrow, he came up, Elon Musk has been working on this rocket that was good enough. It was a good enough rocket that we could finally get to where Jesus went. Because the ascension, Jesus ascending to heaven, it means that he's no longer in time and space. He's in a different dimension. The wild thing, the doctrine of the ascension, the doctrine of Christianity is that Jesus, who was incarnate, who was here on earth, that walked the earth for 33 years, was in the flesh, that he still has his body in heaven. And that we're going to have our bodies in heaven. But as Jesus ascended, he enters into a different dimension, if you will. He's not limited by time and space of being here over there, in which now, because he transcends and is in a different dimension, no longer limited by time and space. But isn't it true, like, we just intuit that up is better than down? Like, when we're down, we want to be brought up. Don't we want to go up when we're down? Like, when we're weighed down by sin, as the psalmist says, sin is a burden too heavy to carry, and I'm just weighed down. Some of us here this morning are down. We're down maybe due to sin, in feeling the weight of sin, of past mistakes or current mistakes. We're weighed down just because of the messiness of our human nature. We're down. We feel down. Question is, like, do I turn to him and just say, like, I want to go up. I want to go up. So why St. Paul, the second reading the church gives us on the ascension is St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians in chapter 4. He says, as he's asking about the ascension, he goes, he ascended. Jesus ascended on high and took prisoners captive. He rhetorically asks, what does he ascended mean? Except that he also descended into the lower regions of the earth. See, to understand the ascension, we got to know about the descent. Paul's referring here, of course, that after Jesus died on the cross, he descended down into hell and he took prisoners captive. There's a famous icon. If you live within the Clarendon Hills zip code, you received this during Lent in your mailbox from us. The famous icon depicting this of Jesus in hell, and he's standing over Adam and Eve. And he's got them both by the hand, Adam in one hand, Eve in the other hand, and he's there on their grave as they're shackled in chains and wrapped around their ankles, and they're in the grave. They're shackled with chains that are just, they're too tight on them that they can't get off on their own. They're in graves that are too deep in which you can see them kind of trying to crawl out of the grave on their own. And Jesus is standing there over the grave, one hand to the other, and he's pulling them out of the grave. And the tradition of the church is always understood of Jesus kind of repeating the words of Paul there as he goes down to hell and saying, arise, let us leave this place. You were not made for this place. You were not made for this dungeon. You were not made for this darkness. So let us arise and ascend. Thereby creating a path up to heaven out of our sin. See, as he pulls them up, and that Jesus is not in time or space. The beauty of that is the beauty of Christianity is that as Jesus ascends and he's he's in a different dimension, as you will, that he can come right now. He can come right now. He can come to you. He can come in me. He can come into you right now. Maybe just to close with, we hear the conclusion of Mark's gospel here. And it says that is right before Jesus ascends into heaven, he turns to his disciples and he turns to you and me. And he says, go out into the world and preach the gospel to the whole world. See, the ascension ought to move us out. Especially as maybe you think we've been frameworking all of this Easter season as us having this opportunity in the next 10 years, as increasingly maybe people are realizing in the void of religion and the void of God, they're realizing that there must be something more. And maybe they've been reaching and looking and searching for those from trying to satisfy their discontent. And maybe they currently feel that they're too weighed down from their sin, and they're too far down, and they're so far down that they can't be brought up, needing someone to just to take them by the hand, or maybe just whisper it in the ear and they say, no, you can go up. There's a way up. You feel down, weighed down by sin, weighed down by the brokenness of your humanity, by mistakes. You down? Are you down? You know that you can go up. You know that there's a way up. You know that he went up. You know that he ascended. And you know that he comes to you right now, that he can come to you right now? Boy, there's people that are just dying to hear that. Maybe some of us right now even want to respond to that, respond to him coming, that he can come, that he ascended, that he's reaching, that he's even reaching down, he's reaching to you, he's reaching to me, that if we feel down, maybe we come to the church right now and we're down to say, boy, I wish I'd go up. I wish I could go up. Is there a way up? If there is a way up, could I go up? Would I go up? Can I go up? We can tell others and we can know ourselves and we can say, want more, desire more, long for more. Don't quench it. Don't look anywhere, but want more, long for more, because there's an answer to the more. And he's come down. He's come down deep into whatever grave you find yourself in right now to bring you up. All you have to do, all I have to do, is grasp him by the hand as he ascends.